evening's learning was dedicated anonymously by a member of our shul as a schus for refuah shlema for Itamar Tzvi ben Devorah Esther, and we hope that he will have a refuah shlema bekarov. And I'm saddened that he's not here tonight. He was supposed to come, but I hope he feels well enough to join us in the future. He doesn't want everybody to know who he is, but he was thinking that he was going to be well enough to be here, and unfortunately he is not. The sugya that we all spend time learning this evening is a fascinating one, and I have to thank Rabbi Wolf for taking the time to translate a number of the very important Mar Makomas here that he put together. Thank you to all of you for coming. It's a Kiddush Shem Shamayim that we spend our time learning together, and we have the opportunity to go through the Mar Makomas. And something that I mentioned to the women upstairs was that the reason, you know, some of them said, why did you give us so many Mar Makomas? Like, did you think we were going to get through this in an hour? So I said, now you understand, when you call the rabbi with a very simple shaila as to, when am I supposed to observe the yahrzeit this year? You understand that he has to go through 15 pages of Mar Makomas to get the answer, and the Mar Makomas aren't given to him. He has to find all of them. So just appreciate a little bit what goes into a shaila when you have to deal with it, and how we come to the outcome. And that is really something that we can all appreciate as we go through the sugya, as you see the Gemaras, and you see how it trickles down into the Rishonim, and into the Shulchan Aruch, and into the later poskim. It gives you a sense of how intricate and how detailed the halacha is, and how much we need to make sure that we really dot the I's and cross the T's, and make sure to look into everything to fully understand all of the sugyas that are at play whenever a shaila happens to come up. So we started with the Gemara Masechah Sanhedrin. The Gemara in the beginning of Sanhedrin is talking about Kiddush HaChodesh and Ibur Hashana. Obviously here there's just one little snippet of the Gemara, but the general discussion of the Gemara is about Kiddush HaChodesh. As we know, we now follow a fixed calendar, but the way it used to be in the times of the Gemara was that they would have two witnesses that would come in, two Edim that would say they saw the new moon, and then the Beis Din would interrogate them. Ultimately, if they found them to be saying the truth, they would be Mekadish the Chodesh. We do a slight replica of that every Shabbos Mevarchim, not exactly the same. For example, when we didn't have shul for a number of months during the height of the pandemic, at the time, we observed Rosh Chodesh anyway, even though we didn't have Shabbos Mevarchim in shul and nobody made an announcement, we had Rosh Chodesh anyway, because we follow a fixed calendar. But in the times of Chazal, that is not the way it was. And every so often, not only did they have to be Mekadish the Chodesh, but they also had to be Ma'abr the Shana. Why would, ask the Gemara Masechah Sanhedrin, why would you ever have a reason to be Ma'abr the Shana? For what reason would that come to play? So the Gemara says three reasons, three potential reasons. Number one, Al Ha'aviv, Va'al Peros Ha'ilan, Va'al Ha'tkufa. So we'll focus on the first one because that's what's relevant to us. So Rashi says, what does it mean that they would be Ma'abr the Shana because of the Aviv? Rashi writes in Masechah Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Aleph, right here on the top, Im Lo Bishla Ha'tvua. As we know, the Torah says, Shamaras Chodesh Ha'aviv. We're supposed to observe Pesach during a certain season of the year. Now what happens if we're not up to that season of the year? Then how are we going to observe the Pasuk in Chumash that says, Shamaras Chodesh Ha'aviv? So the way that we reconcile that is by adding an additional month, and then we're going to push off the season a little bit longer, and then we will observe Pesach in the right time of the year. So that is the basic reason that the Gemara gives why sometimes they had to be Ma'abr the Shana. Other times the Gemara says it was because of additional reasons, Peres Ha'ilan, Alat Kufa, very similar, but basically because of Chodesh Ha'aviv was a very important reason. Now the Gemara in the second entry here tells us that they were always careful to be Ma'aber Chodesh Adar. They tried their best to be Ma'aber Chodesh Adar. Why? Why don't you do Ibur of Chodesh Cheshvan? Why don't you add two Cheshvans or two Kislevs? It would be nice to have two Hanukkahs. It would be nice to have a celebratory month any time of the year. Why do we have two Adars in particular? So that is explained by Rashi and Tosis. Rashi says, simply, if the reason why we push it off is because we want the Aviv, we want the blossoming of the fruits to be at the time of Pesach, then how are we supposed to know in Cheshvan whether at the time that Pesach comes around, the fruits are going to be at that season of the year? So we have to wait to make an evaluation, to make an assessment later on. So we wait till the last minute, we wait till Adar, we go outside to see how we're doing with the harvesting, how we're doing with the produce, where's everything holding, and then we make a determination. Do we have to push off Chodesh Adar and make it a second one in order that Pesach should be in the right season? Or should we assume that it's good enough to do it as is now? And that is why, just for practical reasons, they would wait for Chodesh Adar to be the additional month as opposed to any other month. Tosa says,
when in Adar do they do they make that decision?
That's a good question. When in Adar do they make the decision? I would assume that they would wait. They would wait till the end.
The end of Adar?
I think so.
But they would have missed Purim.
Oh, they would have missed Purim. That's a good question. Doesn't the Gemara discuss this? The Gemara talks about when they did it. So the Gemara says before Purim, they had to make the determination. But they did not make the determination at the beginning. I don't think they made it. The Gemara says later that I don't think they made it at the beginning of Chodesh Adar. It seems that they deliberated. They had a discussion. Right, so Bidiyevid. So Bidiyevid, you can wait till the end, but the Gemara says they tried to do it before Purim. Again, these are details in the discussion, but the general reason why they did it in Chodesh Adar was for that reason. Now, Tosas says that's not the case. Tosas there writes, it's not because we have to wait for Chodesh Aviv and know exactly when it is. No, Tosas says, for anyone who's a studier of the Megillah, you know that in Megillah Esther it says that there was a decree on the Jewish people that in the 12th month of the year, which is Chodesh Adar, that is when the decree was put upon the Jewish people. So Tosa says, what's going to happen if we have two cheshvans in any given year, or two kislevs? Then it comes the month of Adar, and we're up to the 13th month of the year. We lay in the Megillah, it's going to say, oh, in the 12th month of the year, Ahasuerus and Haman made a decree that they're going to destroy the Jewish people, which is Chodesh Adar. Not true. It's Chodesh Adar, which is the 13th month of the year. Tosa says, we don't want the Megillah to come out sounding different than the reality that we are experiencing. And therefore, Tosa says, that is why they would wait to do the Ibur Hashanah until Chodesh Adar instead of doing it in a different month. That is the reason Tosa says. Interesting, but that is what he writes. Then, either way, we have a specific reason why Adar is the additional month. We now need to figure out which one is the primary one, which one is the predominant month. Is it the first one, or do we assume that it is really supposed to be the second one? So, the Talmud Yerushalmi actually has this discussion. And the Talmud Yerushalmi writes that it will make a difference for Kivsei Atzeres. If you had a hard time reading the two sources on the bottom, it's because Yerushalmi is much more difficult language than the Talmud Bavli. Most of us are familiar with Talmud Bavli terminology, but Talmud Yerushalmi is difficult in general. So here the Talmud Yerushalmi writes that it would make a nafkamina, would make a difference for the following case. We know that on Shavuos there is a karban of Kivsei Atzeres. You're supposed to bring Shnei Kvasim Ben Eishanat Mimim. You're supposed to bring two Kvasim. Now what does that mean? Shnei kevasim, b'nei shana tamimim, means they have to be 1 year old. Now, how do you know it's 1 year old? What if I have a shana muberes? So Tosis writes, we have to know which Adar is the right Adar to know how to determine whether or not this keves is considered to be still b'nei shana or it's past that part. So that is really the discussion that the Yerushalmi has. It really mentions it fleeting, very passing in the Lashon HaYerushalmi, but that is the discussion. We turn to a Gemara Maseches Nedarim, which is on page 2, and the Gemara there has a discussion between a machlokes between Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. What is the Stam Lashon? What does a person mean when he takes a nether? Take, for example, I want to go on a diet, so I decide I take a nether upon myself. I'm not going to eat potato chips for the entire year. So what did I mean when I say the entire year? When does the year end? Do I mean 12 months? Do I mean including Adar? Do I mean if there's double Adar, is it that? So that's what the Gemara is discussing there. So Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda have a dispute. When somebody says, I'm not going to eat potato chips for the entire month of Adar, what does he mean? Does he mean Adar Rishon? Does he mean Adar Shon? There's no way he meant both. He's going to abstain from potato chips for 2 months? No way. So obviously he means one of them. Does he mean just Adar Rishon? Or does he mean Adar Shon? He didn't specify. So the Gemara there is trying to figure out, which one did he have in mind when he made the nether? Did he have in mind, when I say Adar, do I have in mind Adar Rishon? Do I have in mind Adar Sheni? That trickles down to a machlokes a Rishonim. Do we paskin like Rav Meir or like Rabbi Yehuda? Is the first one the major one, or is the second one the major one? The problem with bringing a proof from that, again, some want to say that from here, you have the major discussion, which is the foundation of the Shulchan Aruch discussion, as to whether Adar Rishon is the Iker or Adar Sheni. Not so clear that you can bring a proof from that case. Why? Because in general, if you look in Maseches Nedarim, which is not on here, but in general, the Gemara there has a discussion about Nedarim, an overview of Nedarim, and the Gemara gets into detailed discussion. When a person says this, does he mean that? When he says the other thing, does he mean this? So the Gemara says, for example, somebody takes upon himself a neder that he's not going to eat mevushal. Hanodar mina mevushal. So Gemara Nedarim daf mem tes. So the Gemara says, someone says, I'm not going to eat cooked food. So does he mean he's also not going to eat fried, something fried or deep fried? Something is baked in the oven. Did he mean also baked? Does he mean only he's only going to eat raw? Or does he mean no, something that you cook in a pot? So the Gemara goes through a lot of these discussions. That's just one example of many. But the Gemara goes through many different discussions. What does a person mean when they take a nadir upon themselves? Why do we get into such detailed discussion when it comes to nadarim? Because the rule in nadarim is, b'nadarim haloch achar lasha menei adam. By nadarim, it's not dependent on what the Torah had in mind. It's dependent on what I had in mind. What did I want to take upon myself? So here, when the Gemara has the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, one could potentially argue, when I say I'm not going to eat potato chips during Chodesh Adar, what did I mean? Chodesh Adar Rishon or Chodesh Adar Sheni? It's a dispute in the Gemara, a dispute in the Mishnah there, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. But maybe you cannot extrapolate from that to anything else. Why? Because maybe that is specific to Nadarim. Because by Nadarim, we need to know what did a person have in mind. Or take, for example, the Gemara there says, when it comes to writing a shtar, we have to know, did he mean Adar Rishon or Adar Sheni? So as we know, when you fill out a ksuba, you have to be very precise, very exact. But you need to know exactly when this took place, when's the transaction going into effect. And that is a very important detail. Now, what happens if we all know that if you go into a business deal, if you go into a transaction with someone, you're going to have your lawyer read it over. Why? Why? Why should the lawyer read it over? Because somebody else may come along and think that there's an implication that is contrary to what you had in mind. Now, I know what I had in mind, but not always when it comes out on paper is it always the same. So when we make a deal, when we make a transaction and we put it down on paper, everybody needs to make sure that the terms are very well understood by both parties and that there cannot be any misinterpretation of what we said. So when it comes to a shtar, that also might be different. When it comes to a shtar and I write Adar in the shtar, it doesn't matter whether Adar Rishon is the more important or Adar Sheni. What we need to determine is, what did the two parties have in mind? And maybe you cannot learn from there to any other case. Maybe that's not relevant to Bar Mitzvah or Yahrzeit, because maybe Nedarim in particular, and Shtaros as well, will be very different, because we need to understand what did the two parties have in mind when they had this discussion. So we move to a brief discussion about Bar Mitzvahs. Now, Bar Mitzvahs in general is fascinating. There are different times when the Torah tells us, Am I over time already? Different times when the Torah tells us that people are hungry. Feel bad. Nope. There are different times when the Torah says that you need to have a certain amount of days before performing a mitzvah. For example, Torah says you have to do a pidyon haben 30 days. So when do we do the pidyon haben?
On the 30th.
Incorrect. So here's what's interesting. I remember I was at a pidyon haben in Eretz Yisrael, and this family decided they were going to be so fancy that they were going to invite one of the very chashuv Rosh Yeshiva in Yerushalayim to be the Kohen for the Pidyon HaBen. He shows up to the Pidyon HaBen, pulls out his pocket calendar, goes over to the mother, and he says, when did you have the baby? Mother's counting back. Which day was it? Tells him exactly when it was. Tuesday afternoon, 6 o'clock. He says, Pidyon HaBen is tomorrow. You're a day off. The Pidyon HaBen has to be on Yom Lamed Aleph. It's after the child is already past 30 days of life. Then we do a Pidyon HaBen. Common mistake. A lot of people make that mistake. So as a Kohen, you need to always check in. If somebody asks you to do a Pidyon HaBen, you got to really check it out beforehand. Ramras, you looked into it? Who's doing it? Make sure they have it right. Anyway, I've seen this before that it's a mistake, but when the Torah says you need 30 days, what does it mean you need 30 days of the child's life? So if the child was born 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so you can't do the Pidyon HaBen until 5 o'clock 31 days later? Or do you say no, it's 30 halachic days? Or do you say Mitzvah Kekula, right? By Shiva, it says you have to sit 7. It's not a good example because the Torah doesn't mandate a Shiva. It's Midrabanan. But what does it mean when we say a person has to sit Shiva 7 days? There we know Mitzvah Kekula, we will count part of a day as a full day. So that might not be a great example. It's a different exception to the rule there. But in general, let's say the Torah says you need Yom HaShmini for a child to have a Bris Milah. So what if the child was born 3 o'clock in the afternoon? You can't have the Bris Milah till 3 o'clock in the afternoon 8 days later? Of course not. Why? Because it means 8 halachic days. But that's not necessarily the case every time the Torah says you need a certain amount of days. You have to look at each one in particular and really determine what did the Torah have in mind. So when it comes to a bar mitzvah, this is a major discussion, and the Shach and the Bach and all the Achronim have this discussion. What does it mean when we say a child becomes a bar mitzvah at 12 or 13? So what if the child was born 5 o'clock in the afternoon? So they're not really going to be officially bar mitzvah till 13 years later, 5 o'clock in the afternoon? Is that what it means? No, of course that's not what it means. We don't accept that opinion. We follow the predominant opinion of the Achronim, which is that you become a bar mitzvah once the child is halachically into his 13th year of life, right? Once he's passed through, no, into the 14th year of his life, sorry. Once he is into the 14th year of life, that's good enough. Take, for example, it comes up all the time. You have sometimes a family that will travel to Eretz Yisrael for a bar mitzvah, right? So the child has not experienced 13 years of life, right? Because he's 7 hours ahead. So even if you leave aside the hour difference, you're a day ahead of yourself where you were in America. Would we say the child has to wait an extra day? Of course not. Why? Because we go by halachic calendaric days, and that's good enough. You don't have to go by the time zones and what time it is. Happens to be, there's an opinion of the She'iltos, which in general, when the She'iltos says something, the Acharonim, right, we take it very seriously. So the She'iltos is of the opinion that no, a bar mitzvah is only me'es leis, from the moment that the child was born until. So that's what they say about the Brisker Rav. If you ever read any stories about the Brisker Rav, he was very scrupulous about many different things, diktuk and mitzvos. So the Brisker Rav, you know, his child, let's say they had a bar mitzvah, su'uda at night of the bar mitzvah, he was very excited. And the first mitzvah the child was able to do was Davin Maariv. So he says, Kriya Shema. Oh, you can be Mekayim the mitzvah derais of Kriya Shema. First time in your life, amazing, you're a gadol. So he was all excited. Fine, the kid davens for the Yamud, says Kriya Shema. Brisker Rav said, oh, but the Shiltas writes, you're not a bar mitzvah until 3 o'clock in the morning when you were born. So apparently the Brisker Rav woke up his children at 3 o'clock in the morning. Don't try this at home. Woke up his children at 3 o'clock in the morning to say Kriya Shema again, because he said, when you said Kriya Shema 8 o'clock at night, you weren't yet a gadol. Now, 3 o'clock in the morning, you're a real gadol. That's not the generally accepted opinion. It's the opinion of the She'iltos. In general, we assume that one becomes a bar mitzvah 13 years later. So now this becomes a question. It's relevant to this as well. When does one become a bar mitzvah in a Shana Mu'uberes? And that's what the Shulchan Aruch discusses here. That's what everybody was learning before. But one case that I want to point out from Simon Nun Hei in Shulchan Aruch, which is fascinating, would be the following. What happens if you have two children that are born on a Shana Mu'uberes? Right? It's a strange case. So one child is born in Chavtes Adar Rishon, and the other child is born Beis Adar Sheni. So one is older than the other by a few days. Now it comes 13 years later, and there's only 1 month Adar. So when do you observe the Bar Mitzvah? Writes the Shulchan Aruch, the one who was born second is going to be Bar Mitzvah first. It's just so paradoxical, it's so strange. The one who was born second, since his birthday is on Beis Adar, even though it was Beis Adar Sheni when he was born, but he's going to be bar mitzvah before the one who was born before him, which is very unusual, very strange. What I find even more interesting about all this is, Rav Moshe has a tshuva that he writes to Rav David Feinstein, Zichrono Livracha, and what's strange about it is that this must have been a shaila that happened a million to a thousand times before Rav David Feinstein came around. So it's so interesting to me that he came up with the shaila. Rav Moshe wrote a whole tshuva. You can see it here later on. It's on page 6 on the side of the page, left side of the page. You can see a beautiful tshuva of Rav Moshe, where Rav David asked him the shaila, where he says, what happens in general if you have somebody who passes away on Chavtes Adar? Lamed Adar. Then it comes the next year, and there's only 29 days of Adar. So when do they observe the Yahrzeit? There is no day on the calendar that fits the time when the person passed away. So what do you do? So Rav Moshe writes in the whole tshuva here, but I find it so interesting. Before Rav David Feinstein came around, what did everybody do? This happens all the time. If somebody dies the last day of the month, then the next year, you don't have that day, so what do you do? Interesting tshuva here. Interesting to think about. Be it as it may, I'm way over my time. Let me just close with one final comment, and that is, the Gemara Maseches Megillah does discuss what should we assume with regard to the observance of Purim itself. So the Gemara says we have two conflicting values here. On the one hand, the Gemara says we generally assume that mitzvah baliyadcha al tach mitzena, ein ma'avir in ala mitzvos. When a mitzvah comes my way, I should do it immediately. No, that doesn't mean I should blow shofar today. The time of the mitzvah is not today. But if I have Chodesh Adar, and I have the opportunity to be Mekayim in the mitzvahs Hayom of Mikra Megillah and Mishlach Manas Matanas Laviyonu, why shouldn't I do it in the first month? So on the one hand, I should have argued that we should observe all the mitzvahs of Purim in the first month of Adar. On the other hand, the Gemara says we have a conflicting value, and that is that we want to be Masmich Geula LeGeula. There's some kind of intrinsic connection that the Gemara assumes applies between Purim and Pesach, and we want to put them as close together as possible. And therefore, the Gemara says there that we would assume that a person who has the opportunity to choose between Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni with regard to the observance of mitzvahs for Chag HaPurim should really observe it in the second month as opposed to in the first, even though you're passing over the opportunity to do it in Adar Rishon, but because the second value is more important, and that is that we want to be Masmich Geula LeGeula. We want to have the opportunity to have Purim and Pesach next to each other. Again, a shiur unto itself, an interesting topic, but it's something that is important to the way the Gemara understands the intrinsic connection between Purim and Pesach. Anyway, a lot more to say here, a lot more to read, a lot more to see. Very fascinating sugya, but we just gave the brief highlights. I hope everybody enjoyed the learning themselves.